You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And it's the first 5 o'clock shadow of 2025 with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. And gentlemen, welcome. Looking forward to a very interesting 2025. That's the kindest way I can put it. And David, a very interesting day in one of your favorite asset classes, which has been under a wee bit of pressure. It's called luxury goods. And today I looked at a headline that said Richemont up 17%. And all the others, of course, followed. What on earth has gone on?
Just demand. And I think it came in the third quarter, which was way above where analysts were expecting demand to be. It was a blowout number. And Lindsay, if you analyze it, a lot of it is coming from tourism. Tourism in Europe and tourism in the US, tourism wherever, you know, in Japan as well, Southeast Asia. Yes, China was down, but not at the same rate it was down before. So I think it caught everybody by surprise. No one expected anything like this. And it was particularly in the jewelry area and, of course, in watches, which we haven't seen for a long time in Richemont or in the market for very expensive watches. And I must say, you know, when I came back from United States through UK in the middle of October, I noticed the enormous number of people in the airports, and I couldn't believe it. I might have, on our shows, we might have mentioned it, et cetera, but yes. I just said, you know, wherever you went, you were elbowing people out the way and so on. There just seemed to be a huge number of people traveling. And, while they were traveling, I don't know whether we can translate that into actually buying goods. And these are expensive goods. So I'm saying, you know, when you see Richemont, as you mentioned, I'm just looking now, it's up something in Europe. It's up something like 15.5%. I mean, that's an enormous gain.
It's massive.
And it gives you an idea of how the markets have responded. LVMH in Europe is up over 7%, but we've seen Kering and Hermes and all these companies as well benefiting, saying, okay, you know, if they show those kind of sales, we're going to see a turnaround. So it is a surprise in a market where people thought, you know, were slowing down.
It's very interesting. It's also to do with the global economy. Before I come to go to Viv on the AI story, David, how do you think it compares? You go to an airport and you're wandering around. You've got 2 hours to wait because you have to get there early, and you see an LVMH shop, whichever one of their brands it is. And do you really go there and buy a $20,000 watch? What are the comparisons between, for example, the shops at an airport and, say, a shop on Fifth Avenue in New York or a shop on Bond Street in London? Who do you think does better?
First of all, you don't get duty free in America. You know, you don't get it in the airports. You might have luxury goods there, but there's no real benefit. Maybe you're saving a bit of tax. But when I came back from Sydney, you are saving various taxes. You're certainly saving VAT, and you're saving what other taxes might be on it. But I don't think the difference is that great, and that's what I can't understand. And if you analyze the luxury businesses, you'll see that the amount of sales of perfumes and goods like that, of beauty products, of bags in Australia, the entire Sydney airport, there's no such thing as duty free. I mean, you know, when you used to go into an airport, you could buy soccer tops or football tops or rugby tops. No, those shops don't exist today. Or you could buy a tracksuit. It's all luxury. Mm. And there's somehow, whether you've got guilty businessmen buying or whatever it is, but I have a rule. I never cross that threshold. And people say, come in. I say, nah, I'm not coming in. You know, just because, not that I'm going to buy, but it's just crazy what the prices are. But obviously people are buying. You know, they've got the kind of money that can buy.
People are buying. The global economy is growing, which we'll come to later on with our little bit of a macro analysis. But this comes from David Shapiro, who is an investor in the luxury goods sector with, and he's done well out of it for himself and his clients. And I'm not speaking out of turn here, but he still wears a Swatch that he bought 27 years ago. Viv, let's talk about AI now. I thought about you several times over the over our break, and today I thought about you as well because you sent me an article that I couldn't open from the New York Times, and you said it was quite shocking. Please tell us more.
Well, it's an interesting article. You know, I've been talking to you guys for a while about the different demographic changes in the world, as well as political changes and, you know, AI and so on. And Ezra Klein, who's one of the smartest guys, I don't know if you read the New York Times, on the New York Times, certainly above the caliber of someone like a Friedman or David Brooks or something like that there. He wrote an article, which the title was, "This is the Time of Monsters." And he basically refers back to a Italian philosopher from like the last, actually the previous century, before the last, which was talking about the technological changes happening in the world and mentioned that, you know, when you have such uncertainty, then you have monsters arise. And it's quite interesting because just after that, you had World War One, World War Two, and all those crazy things. And it's an interesting thing. The thing that I would like to point out this week in AI is that the US, right, has gone out and made a very strong play to basically cut China and a lot of the rest of the world out of the AI chip market. What they've done is they've created three tiers, right, for AI chips. The first tier is the US, Western Europe, Japan, Australia, and they you can do whatever you want there. The other tier is everything from Yemen down to Singapore. Basically a huge swath of the world, and you are restricted to how many AI chips you can get, and then there's China, you can get nothing. And what's amazing about this is the following. If you think AI is going to take, say, 10, 15 years to come about, you know, take a long time to come about, what they have done is destroyed the US tech sector or chip sector. Why? Because they've said to everyone from India to Brazil to Malaysia, Indonesia, like I said, every country in the world besides Northern, Western Europe, Japan, Australia, and the US, this is entirely China's market. If you want an AI chip, you go to China, right? And if they basically see AI taking 10 years to happen, the Chinese will develop a chip sector that will supply the world. You know what I mean? So this is a very aggressive move on their part that I think is quite interesting.
And so what you're saying is, I remember reading a book, wasn't it a book called The Scramble for Africa? And what you're talking about is people scrambling to get a foothold into this particular market. And it's pretty chaotic, Viv. But is it chaotic in a good way? I mean, is all this that you've just described briefly constructive or destructive for the AI industry?
Well, I think what this is, it shows that the U.S. government especially thinks that AI is not just, you know, going to come. It's going to come really quickly. They're saying that, you know, AI is not going to take 10 years to come about or 20 years to come about, because if that was the case, you're giving the Chinese market more than enough time to create their own system internally, and you're also handing them all of India, all of Brazil, South America, basically Africa, most of Asia, over to China as basically being the sole supplier of these chips. NVIDIA can't supply to these guys because they are restricted by law. You're taking your most productive chip maker and saying you can't supply to these people because, you know, we're limited. And that's obviously giving the market over to China. You don't do that unless you believe it's going to happen so quickly that the Chinese won't have a chance to actually catch up because they don't have enough time to make up their own chip sector. So that is what's really interesting about this.
Okay, we'll go from chips to the application of chips later on, Viv, because I noticed there was a bit of a problem with Apple over the time since we've last spoken. But anyway, I want to move straight back to David because the bank's results are out this week or coming out this week from the United States of America. Shooting the lights out, David. It's mainly the asset management industry because of the markets going up, of course.
Yeah, it is that. You know, they're not making money on lending money. In other words, the interest rate differential or anything like that. It's all on trading and it's all on M&A and issues around that. So they are very good results, you know, and I mean, if you go through them, without exception, Morgan Stanley were out today. I've still got to go through it. I think of Bank of America. Yes. But likewise, they've all beaten their forecast. So there is a lot of activity. I've got to be honest. I thought that it was too early for that. You know, one of the things we were looking forward to was that with rates coming down, we were going to see a lot more happening in the banking world. But it happened earlier than we thought. And I think a lot of deals are going to take place. There's going to be a lot of consolidation. So these are monstrous companies as well. I mean, they're very, very huge, and they're big results. What I do like about it is that the market, Lindsay, is responding to good numbers. You know, in other words, we use, even with Richemont, as we saw, when good numbers come out, the market responds. And I find that encouraging, and especially over the results, because I think if there's one thing that's going to define the market this year, it's going to be earnings, you know, more so than worrying about inflation or geopolitical issues and that. And as long as businesses can come out with decent earnings, I think that's going to be the prop. That doesn't mean we're going to have a blowout market like last year, but I mean, it's going to give support and just steadily push up the, like the S&P and that. So, I'm encouraged by what we're seeing in the response to, those kind of numbers.
Okay, macroeconomics now. Viv, I saw something that came from the Bank of America, actually, and it said that the world's bond markets, developed world bonds markets, are in their sixth long-term bear market since the year 1790. I don't know how many years we've been in this bear market, but it's extraordinary to hear that. If you've just come and got a job at a financial services company as trading on the desk, you thought last year, goodness me, we're in a bull bond market, but we're not. In September, I think, last year, the US 10-year was trading at something like 3.6% yield. Now it's, well, a few days ago, it was close to 5%, now back to 4.68 or something like that. But the point is, the US economy is still doing well. Jobs are being created. The inflation number from yesterday, I think it was, came in at 2.9%, and people seem to be delighted with that, Viv. Do you think the world is doing well? Do you think China's going to do well in order to embellish the US's performance? And do you think, Viv, that people are richer and that's why they're buying watches at Sydney Airport?
I think also people are, I mean, not to bring it back to politics here, but I mean, if you look at the banking, announcements yesterday, these guys are making record profits. And what are they talking about? Lower regulation and lower taxes because of the Trump administration boosting confidence. Okay, so you're already seeing like Mark Zuckerberg going out and basically, if you watch him, the Joe Rogan podcast, totally going crazy about how wonderful Trump is. Nvidia has a statement and on that thing about how horrible Biden is and how good Trump is. Amazon put a $40 million package together for the documentary on Melania Trump. I don't know how interesting Melania Trump is, but she's not $40
million. She's not interesting at all.
Hey, hold on a sec, Viv.
$40 million. It's like probably the most expensive documentary. It's like David Attenborough's like whole series kind of stuff. You know, it probably doesn't cost $40 million. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying to you that corporate America is seeing regulations falling. It's seeing taxes coming down, and they are getting basically all in. I mean, and here's another interesting fact. You know, TikTok was banned, right, in the U.S. Mm. Guess who's going to be at the Trump inauguration? The TikTok CEO.
It's because he's paid $1 million to be there. That's why, Viv. He's going to be pardoned, or rather, TikTok is going to be unbanned.
I don't know if TikTok won't be unbanned because Trump is pro TikTok. If you listen to him talk about it, because obviously they're one of the places that allowed him to talk when he was banned on Facebook and other places.
So now what you must do, Viv, read Biden's speech yesterday. I don't know
I did.
Did you get got through it on New York Times? It's covered there as well. He speaks about the oligarchs.
Yes.
Yeah, the tech industrial complex.
The tech
industrial complex. And look, I mean, the thing is that he's talking about it too late. He should have been talking about it two, three years ago. But the problem is, at that point in time, they were on his side. You know, Facebook was on his side. But you must always realize when it comes to things that you can never put any of these restrictions in place or support like these industries too much, because one day they'll be on your side, the other day they'll be against you. You've got to plan as if you one day will be against them, you know what I mean? And that is the mistake that I think the Democrats have made here. But what I'm talking about with regards to all of the stuff is that I do think that we are going to see a very volatile here in the market, but it's possible that we could see things like China do really well. If Trump comes in and he basically reverses some of these Biden administration things, there is a possibility you see China take off. If he reverses the TikTok ban and the Tencent, listing as a military company, China could do really well, surprisingly. And this is something that I think people are underestimating.
David, just before you go on and before you lose your thread, when Viv was talking about our dear First Lady, soon to be First Lady, Melania Trump, the immigrant, why did you intervene there? You wanted to say something.
Well, if you know her history, you'd like to see a documentary about it. you know, a fully explicit one as well. I mean, understanding where she came from. So that's one of the.
She came from the old Yugoslavia, didn't she?
Oh, no.
She had a very beautiful mother.
But she wasn't, yeah, I know. She was beautiful herself. She wasn't exactly came out of a monastery or whatever it is. Anyway.
So what you're saying is that you will be watching this documentary.
Oh, yes.
So predictable. The other thing is, just on the Biden's speech, which you both read, and I've sort of watched snippets of it, it was compared with his concerns over the new oligarchy in the United States was compared to a speech. I think it was Eisenhower. Am I getting my Eisenhower made in 1961.
People are saying that either he
lifted it from there or it's just a convenient coincidence. Well, what are your thoughts on that one, both of you?
I didn't read Eisenhower's speech. I was a little too young at that stage, but. I think the point he makes is right, and what he's referring to is the whole what do you call them the PayPal mafia or Peter Thiel and all those people and all those ultra rich people who are muscling their way into government, and he's saying it's not for the good of all the people, it's for the good of themselves and self enrichment, and I think that's the whole message, is that the people who are running it. Are not really running it for the good of the country, but more with a lot of self-interest. So
yes, with one straw that's stirring that drink, and that straw is Donald J. Trump.
Yeah,
and I'd love to know what's going on there. Okay, it's $1 million for a seat at the inauguration, but there's must be so much more stuff going on behind the scenes.
I think you're wrong. Mark Andreessen, the guy that did Netscape, is interviewing candidates for the Trump administration. So he's actually basically the hiring manager for the Trump administration, Mark Andreessen, okay? Peter Thiel, okay? We're talking about, obviously we know J.D. Vance was a Peter Thiel employee, vice president. Basically, one of the biggest moves, my AI portfolio, the biggest return I had last year was in Palantir, founded by Peter Thiel. Okay, 200%+ up for the year. Okay, obviously not. But Elon Musk, obviously you know about Chikolas, Ramaswamy as well. He's also a billionaire. He's like not as much as a billionaire as Musk, but a billionaire is still a billionaire. And of course, we're talking about this Amazon thing. It's obviously bribery. I mean, you can't be two ways about it. You may argue that she's going to have an interesting documentary and whatever, but $40 million for a documentary about a first lady. That is just bribery. It's no other word for it. Okay. And basically, what Zuckerberg is doing, watch the Zuckerberg interview with Rogan, and he comes across as being like almost like he had a gun to his head because of Biden, and Biden was this monster that was basically shouting at him on the phone and that kind of stuff. He talks about Biden officials basically shouting at the phone and threatening him with prison and whatnot, and how he's like almost free for the first time under Trump, and this kind of move is. I thought they'd be more favorable towards Trump than Biden because of, a number of factors. But what I've seen over the last couple of weeks has been amazing. It is coming down to almost like has mentioned, the tech industrial complex, where it's almost a group of oligarchs have got together. We can control the world now.
But Viv, there's, what's interesting? And if you look at Zuckerberg was at, by nature, he would have been a Democrat. He would have been brought up. As a Democrat, understanding his background. And what is interesting, what his attitude does is almost depict what's happened to the Democratic Party, how it's changed its attitudes, because it was always, it was a blue collar company, it was the blue collar party, really favoring kind of, people like Zuckerberg, et cetera, just their general upbringing. The fact that he's gone and they put pressure on him says a lot for people's views towards, the Democrats. You know, how this neo left or these left liberals started to take over and put kind of pressure or try and enforce their policies. And I think it had a lot to do with, it's had a lot to do with the demise or the fall of the Democrats. So when I'm looking at more from a social point of view, he would have been brought up a Democrat. Now that he's saying, oh, thank goodness we got rid of them, I think says a lot.
Yeah, it does. And the other thing that says a lot is the grilling of the Trump nominees for his cabinet, for want of a better word. And I watched with a great deal of fascination, morbid fascination, of Pete Hegseth getting grilled by people. And yet people were slapping him on the back, and there was lots of fist pumping and smiles afterwards. He's a disaster. And also Ramaswamy, who you just mentioned, Viv, they say he's the other one that will get a grilling but will still get through. And who's that other woman, Tulsi, what's her name?
Vivek Ramaswamy won't be grilled because he's not going to be in a position that has a grilling. Like, he's like Elon Musk. He's appointed to something that's what people were mistaken when they saw Ramaswamy and Musk being given these positions of Doge. They thought, this has no power. In reality, it is much more powerful than you think, because it doesn't have that same grilling that these guys go through. Gabbard will be grilled because of her links apparently to Russia. Rubio is already through. The other pawn is Bondi, who's the AG that's been replaced. That's replaced that Matt Gaetz guy.
Yeah, I saw her yesterday as well. She did okay, I think.
Okay, but the thing with Pete Hegseth, what you don't realize is that he's playing to the MAGA base, or whatever you want to call it. And these guys are much, they like to see like a tough guy. What is Trump? Trump is basically a tough guy with a veneer of toughness. That's what how is Hegseth not playing exactly the same role Trump is playing? In fact, you would probably see he has higher competence levels than Trump, because he went to, I think, a couple of Ivy League schools.
Not
he
difficult.
Served for multiple years. But he served in the military for several years. He's got, in terms of pure ability, in terms of he's got more ability than Trump. He's qualified to be the position he is, but he's not going to be kicked out because of his inability. He's showing the kind of, almost the macho thing that Trump is pushing forward with. That's why they're supporting him, because that's what they're paying for. They're not paying for, ability. They're paying for this, macho, posturing that he's showing.
Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, let's get back to reality now and have a look at some market prices. We've got the dollar rand at 18.84. We've got the British pound against the rand at 23.02. And the euro rand is currently trading at 19.40. Euro dollar, just below 103. When will it break parity? Will it break parity? Will it go into double figures rather than above one? Who knows? But it's been a hell of a ride. The dollar is a bull market, let's face it. British pound against the US dollar, 122.80. And the woes of the UK with Rachel Reeves, who's hopelessly out of her depth as Chancellor of the Exchequer, has hit the pound horribly. Okay, other things, commodities, gold price 27.15, it's up a couple of dollars, nothing there. Platinum mired below 1,950, but it's up 18 today, let's give it some credit. And palladium is down 7 to $958 per ounce. Other commodities, now this is an interesting one. I've just looked at a 25-year graph of the CRB index. The last time it was here, where it is now, which is 376.04, an index level that is, was in September 2008. So it's gone from, and I'm fiddling around
are
with
you
my...
Are talking in a downtrend?
CRB, this is a huge uptrend. April 2020, it was at 125, let's call it. It's now 376. Commodities are on the up. And we know why. It's the energy complex, which is hugely influential in that index. Brent crude oil, $81.33. And West Texas crude, $79.30. They're both down today, nearly a percent. But these are really big moves to the upside. And other things, copper up 1.1%. And steel up 2.5% and so on. I don't know what this is. Is it the US recovery, or rather continued US boom? Is it the perception that China's going to do well? Because obviously that's inextricably linked with the fortunes of commodities. But nonetheless, there it is. Bitcoin is 98,000, we'll call it, down a little bit. South African 10-year bond, what is that doing? It won't let me in, so I'm not going to do that. Let's go straight to the US 10-year. 4.66, we'll call it. I'm just going to try and go back. Yes, the South African 10-year bond, 9.40%. S&P 500 futures doing very little after a really good day, best day for 2 months yesterday. It's down slightly to 5,980, which is the futures price. And, David, anything on the JSE today?
Well,
I mean, apart from Richemont, yeah.
I know. Funny enough, that's all it is, because if you look at the, say, the top 25 capitalized stocks, I'll give you some other, you know, the only one that really performed was Richemont, up 14.85. And that has an enormous influence on the underlying index. Take that away, it was actually negative. You know, we still saw, I'm just looking at some of the banks, they were negative. Naspers was down. And the Rand was steady, so it didn't have anything of that like that. You know, AB InBev down a bit, BHP. So all of those in negative territory. But of course, Richemont dictated where the, you know, where the index would be. It has a big, big weighting on big influence on where the index closes. So, you know, just for that, we ended up 0.17%. But I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, with Richemont's contribution.
It's a very unusual move, and I don't know. I don't know how you approach it as an investor. But, it seems to me that 17% for such a big company smacks of either thin conditions or short covering, or both. Oh, yeah. David. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, this was an area where people were very. When I say short in attitude, whether they actually put positions on the market, I'm not sure. But generally, they were negative. You know, they did take. They thought with the Chinese consumerism under pressure, you know, the economy under pressure, that's where the big demand for commodities came, and so it was a total surprise to see, you know, the growth outside of China and how big that was. So I'm sure there were people saying, "Hold on a sec, you know, if we are short, let's cover it. We'll just watch what happens." So we'll see if it holds. You know. If these prices are sustainable as well, which will give you a clue of where the market was positioned.
Of the shares that will interest us on the upside on the JSE today, the aforementioned Richemont up 14.5% on the close, AngloGold Ashanti up 3.2%. On the downside, Implats down 4.6%. They're having a terrible, terrible time, these white metal producers. Sappi down 4.5%. Anglo American Platinum down 2.75%. Sasol down 2% despite the booming oil market and the weaker rand. And yeah, Fortress B, the property company, down 1.9%. Outside of your AI obsession, Viv, anything else that you're looking at?
No, I'm interested, however, in what's been happening around Sasol here. I mean, we had it had a very good run until just recently. I mean, obviously last year was a disaster for it, but you know, in the last few months, Sasol's come back quite nicely. You know, it's not the last few weeks, in fact, not in the last few months, last few weeks. And so, yeah, I would expect a bit of a pullback, you know, after a run like that. But I do think that, you know, the moment, it's a surprising thing, like you said, considering the fact that oil prices are recovering as they are, the rand is as weak as it is, and this company is, you know, significantly lower than it was a year ago.
David, give us the closing JSE indices, if you would, and also the all-important trading volume, trading value.
I'll give you the value straight away. We traded around about just under 20 billion, and it was Richemont that dominated, making up 12.5% of the market, trading in about over 2 billion rand. Yeah, then came Naspers, which every day, you know, is at the top, 1.3 billion traded, 7.5%. So a reasonable day, nothing special. We're starting to see this, you know, getting back to these kind of volumes, which is still too low for us to make a living. But the all share up 0.17% at 83659. Resources up 0.15%. Without any real features there. I think the big feature, banks down, financial generally under pressure. The industrial index was up 0.88% solely because of the Richemont contribution. And I'm looking at the consumer discretionary index, which was up over 4.5% again because of Richemont. But if I do go through the what I call the top 80 capitalized stocks, probably 50-50. You know, there were as many gainers as there were losers. And you've mentioned, you know, those stocks that, you know, that were up and those that were down.
Good. Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. It's lovely to have you back. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both in Johannesburg. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. Back same time next week. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.